We will now convene our study session for March the 22nd. Again, all council is present. First item on our agenda for this meeting is to hear a presentation and provide final funding recommendations for the Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnerships, Emergency Solutions Grant, and Human Services Program Funds. Dennis and Liz, good to have you with us. Thank you. I know this has been a very involved process, so thank you for all the hard work that you and the citizens involved with you and the staff have put into this effort.
Good morning, Mayor and Council, and I appreciate your words. I do want to thank my staff who've worked very hard in this process, along with our Housing and Community Development Advisory Board that were extremely involved in this process, and as well as our CCD committee. I will like to go over the recommendations, and I have Dennis Newbern, who led the application process, and he can help add additional information as needed. What we're talking about today are four different funding sources. The first three are federal, from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, as we refer to as HUD. We have the Community Development Block Grant, which in my talking I'll refer to as CDBG, the Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG, which is primarily for homeless activities, and then the Home Investment Partnership we refer to as HOME is strictly a housing funding. And then the Human Services Program consists of our general funds and our ABC donations through our utility bills. So those are the four funding sources for which our applicants applied for funding. Here are the our HUD programs, which are the federal sources. We broke up CDBG into two categories here. The public service are those type of programs that are strictly human service type programs. There is a cap that HUD puts on us. No more than 15% of our overall allocation can be given to public services. Not the CDBG non-public service is everything else. Economic development activities, public improvement, and a variety of other things that we can do. Then you'll see here the home and the ESG. On the first column there is what we are expecting to see in our allocation, which is based on the current year allocation. Good news, as far as what we're seeing, if it passes, it looks like we'll be continuing with funding the way it's stated here. Also, the second column shows that in home, we have some prior year funding that we are rolling over into the 18-19 year. The third column is how much money was requested from our applicants. It shows you the tremendous need in our community. And so we had over 30 30 applications just on our HUD programs. The next slide here shows the general funds and ABC contributions. We expect to continue to be able to allocate $720,000. We received over $1 million in requests, which were 22 applications. And as you can see, the overall total shows, again, what we expect to allocate and what the amount of proposals that we received. In providing these recommendations, I think it's important to talk about the factors for consideration. There's two rounds of scoring that totaled up to 100 points. 70 was done by a smaller committee, which comprised the staff and community members from our Housing and Community Development Advisory Board. And then we had another round of scoring up to 30 points by our Housing and Community Development Advisory Board. Two nights of presentations that went well into the late hours. And so between our applicants and our advisory board and staff, we put in a lot of time to review those proposals. Taking those aggregate scores, the funding recommendations were primarily looking at how they ranked. We also looked at the council and consolidated plan priorities, because oftentimes there's things that we need to fund, even though they may not score as highly. We also look at timeliness to expend funds. HUD has some requirements that we spend funding in a timely way. So if we have a project, as an example, that's construction related, if it takes 2-3 years, we may not want to fund that immediately. And so we look at that. And then overall, what's our funding? So there's going to be limitations, so we have to try to make those decisions based on what's available. So we have very good news. We needed to expend our funds by April 30th. Already, as of today, we have met our 1.5 ratio. In fact, we've exceeded it, thanks to the actions done by council in order for us to expend those funds in a timely way, which means we will not be at risk of losing any funding. So we're very happy to share that.
Congratulations.
I'm going to provide to you the recommendations based on categories as far as what type of services. And it gives you an idea of all the variety of types of work that our nonprofits are doing in our community, which I'm proud to be a part of and able to recommend these funding. So our aging services, East Valley Adult Resources, they have two programs with Human Services Funds and Oakwood Creative Care. These are existing programs that we have funded in the past and continue to recommend funding. Our homeless services is the bulk of our funding. There's just a couple of new projects in here. Overall, they are funded both by CDBG Public Services, ESG, and Human Services. The ones that are new in this category that were recommended were Circle of the City, which is a mobile health unit that serves homeless individuals, and Mark Community Resources, Downtown Navigator. So those are the two new ones. All of them are ongoing existing programs we have funded. The next category is domestic violence services. Chrysalis is a regional domestic violence shelter as well as a New Leafs Autumn House. And those are important programs. Our economic development programs, Local First, we funded them last year with Human Services. This year, I recommend with CDBG. NEDCO does have an increase. They're looking at expanding their economic development activities. And West Mesa CDC has come in, and we are recommending funding of $65,000. Under public facilities improvement, East Valley Adult Resources Building Rehabilitation Project, that actually was funded a couple years back. Because of that timeliness issue, we did take some of those funds because the project wasn't very far into the construction. So we took that money from prior year to fund Eagles Park. So this is to put the money back into what we took from that project. So $600,000 there. Oakwood is at Red Mountain. That's a small rehab project. House of Refuge with their sewer replacement. And then the Child Crisis is a campus expansion for their phase two. Under the housing category, this is actually the largest. Because of our homeowner rehab program, which provides rehabilitation for homeowners who are low to moderate income, CPLC is Chicanos Palacalza. They have purchased Mesa Royale, and they're looking to do some redevelopment in a phased approach. And so those two funding sources help get them started. Also, our tenant-based rental assistance that provides utility and rental deposit. And then under our home category, our CHODO, which is a community housing development organization. Those are important funds that we can only give to a certified CHODO. So those aren't funds that we can expend or give to anyone other than a certified CHODO organization. This category is for low to moderate income persons. It's kind of all sorts of different things from our mobile outreach crisis stabilization services that Community Bridges does in Mesa, United Food Bank, Mesa United Way, the VITA program with Human Services Funds. This is a new project. The SHIFT program is not a new project. It wasn't funded in the current year, but we are looking to refund that one again this year. And then the others are ones that we have continued to support and fund. Under youth and education, the Mesa K Ready, this is the second year of its funding, along with Teen Lifeline. Child Crisis has two programs. The Early Education Mesa Early Head Start is a new one for Child Crisis that we are funding this year. And Homeless Youth Connection, this is their first year of being recommended for funding as well. So those are the recommendations. Our next steps is based on what comes out today. We will then go out to public comment and then come back to approve our annual action plan, which includes the funding recommendations. And that concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Thank you, Liz. Council, any questions? Mr. Glover.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Dennis, for all the hard work that you've done. I want to go back to the homelessness, or the homeless services on slide, I think it's 8. I know that Circle the City is one of the newer programs, but they don't have a history with the city, do they, or any track record of success here?
This would be their first time getting funding, so with the City of Mesa.
All right. I would recommend not funding them and giving their funding to Paz de Cristo, who has a proven track record of success, who has been an integral part for housing our heroes, to helping with our homeless community, and that they have been with us all the way with the data that they've collected. They have been a resource, and I think it would be better to fund somebody who has a proven track record rather than a new organization until they have proven themselves.
Thank you. I had a similar observation, frankly. I think we're all very familiar with Paz de Cristo. I know the council went as a group and served there just a few weeks ago. A couple months ago. So they are really doing the heavy lifting in our community on the front lines of homelessness. And I know they were the recommendation is to fund them at half of the level of last year. I know there's a story behind why that occurred, but. The needs and the demands at Paz de Cristo are more than they were a year ago. So it does seem appropriate for us to adjust the recommendation to bring Paz back to the funding level that they had last year. So I know the question then becomes where does that money come from? Circle the City, I understand, is brand new, does not have a track record. I know they have a good reputation, you know, in other parts of the valley. I'm familiar with the good work they do in Phoenix, so I'm not out to. So I'd like to see them get a chance to establish some good work here in Mesa. So my thought in terms of how do we find the other 25 to bring Paz up to 50 is maybe that we just do a pro rata reduction from a broader category. So that it's fairly painless to the other agencies. It would literally be, you know, 1,000 here and there. But do that in a way to kind of, with the least amount of pain possible to the other recipients, bring Paz up to their funding level of last year. So I'll just, I think I'm on the similar track as Mr. Glover, but I'm just trying to figure out a less painful way to bring Paz back up to where they were last year. So I'll just throw that out for discussion. Jeremy.
Are the two representatives from these organizations here today?
I don't know.
Is there anyone from Circle the City?
No, Chris. From Paz.
From Paz, okay.
So just Paz is here today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Liz, of these organizations that we're funding, how many of them are actually Mesa-based and how many of them are outside of the city?
So on the human services side, there's going to be a combination. All of them are required to show that they're serving Mesa residents. So that's part of their application. But I would say the majority of them are Mesa-based, and there are a few in there. But I don't have the list in front of me that designates which ones are Mesa-based and which ones aren't.
I would say that if there are some that aren't Mesa-based, such as CAS, we should probably look at how many Mesa residents they fund, and then if it's not as many as Paz de Cristo or some of the other organizations, we could lower CAS's, the donation that we make to CAS, and use that to supplement Paz de Cristo.
Liz, can you describe for us what it, given that Circle of City is not here, can you describe what is the East Valley Neighborhood Partnership Program that they're seeking funding for? I know that they're generally, my familiarity with them is that when a homeless person in Phoenix is discharged from the hospital and they need rehabilitation, rather than just sending them to the street, they go to the Circle the City facility and they receive the rehab that they need, so you know, to lessen the likelihood that they're just going to go right back into the hospital because they're living on the street. Is that the same service that they're talking about?
It's not necessarily the same service as what they do in Phoenix. What they have is a mobile health unit. And they are going around to the different homeless service locations, like a New Leaf with the East Valley Men's Shelter, and I believe Save the Family. I do have their application here. I'm sorry. Let me just pull this out. Just briefly, I'm sorry. So they believe that they'll serve an average of 55 homeless patients per month, while increasing in recent months to 93. So they're already providing those services in Mesa. It's an integrated physical and mental health care, and they do well child visits and age-appropriate immunizations for homeless children, case management, allowing patients to apply for access, SSI, SSDI, and housing, and referrals to the health center in Phoenix for substance abuse issues. Patients are also referred to and from partner programs and service providers. So that gives you a small taste of what they would be doing.
So just to summarize, I think I'm sensing a consensus to try to get PAWS back to where they were last year. I think that the question here is, how do we do it? Do we do it by defunding Circle the City and or CAS to some extent? Or do we spread it out in a pro rata basis among all of the recipients? Or some other idea? Mr. Thompson.
Well, I guess my question is, how many Mesa residents does Paz de Cristo actually serve? Because most of them, if not all of them, are homeless. So they're not really tied to an actual residence within Mesa. So how are we... I mean, when we talk about helping our Mesa citizens, how is funding PAWS helping our Mesa citizens?
I will ask them to come forward, if you can, Christine. And I know that they serve a large number of unduplicated. I think it's around 700 a month from what I remember, but I can't speak to how many of those are determined to be Mesa residents.
Because here's my overarching. And it's because we do have a homeless problem. And if we're feeding more homeless people, is that inviting more homeless people into our community? Because we are the stopgap to fill empty stomachs.
Well, and I will tell you, Mayor and Councilmember Thompson, we're not the only feeding in Maricopa County. So there's several locations that St. Vincent de Paul is located, both in Phoenix and Mesa. So there's what I call soup kitchens, and all spread throughout the county. But PAWS has definitely been a big help to our community to be able to serve those meals. So, Christine, do you want to add to that?
Thank you. Well, it's possibly about 7,000 visits a month that we get at PAWS, and 90% are Mesa. And you're correct. If they are homeless, they do pose their address as Mesa. So that's where our figures are coming from, the 90%. We've had the increase over the last year of 8% of overall guests, and then of our homeless community, there has been a little higher increase. With other agencies, I believe, and from our research, we are the only agency that provides dinner every single night to the residents of Mesa. St. Vincent de Paul absolutely does the breakfast, which is lovely because they do the breakfast, we do the lunch, so our guests get the full meal for the day. The $52,000 that we requested actually goes for our security, and it's so important. We could get private security, which we don't think is a good idea. I think it would put our guests in more danger. It would put more of a burden actually on the Mesa Police Department, because we would have to call them then in cases that are happening. We partnered with the city. We were here 30 years this year. It is our 30-year anniversary, and I've been there 13 years this year and have just seen it grow so great. And then our partnership with the city and our police officers that are there, that familiarity of the officers with our guests, it keeps the level down of any incidents that are happening. So that's why we're hoping.
Because I know last year, one of our biggest issues was we didn't have enough beds to accommodate domestic violence, people that were in domestic violence relationships that were trying to get out, or other things like that that were true Mesa residents. And so that's my concern is, how are we best serving the residents, the actual citizens of Mesa? And where's our money best spent? That's just the questions I'm asking, because what I don't want, again, what I don't want to do is become the stopgap for everyone else, all the other cities, to send their homeless folks here because Mesa's going to feed you, because we continue to pump money into soup kitchens to feed the 8% increase every single year that it's going up. My only concern.
And I agree, and all the other agencies that are out there, I mean, Circle the City is brand new, and they are, from what I understand, a great in what they do. CAS Downtown, I know you brought that back up. That was a little different to have, and I know they probably serve Mesa residents. Speaking with our Mesa guests, they do not. That's why they come to POTS, because they do not go.
Does the town of Gilbert have any services like this?
I don't know if they do a nightly meal service every night. They might have church organizations or other organizations that might have dinners. But the other services that we provide now that we're open a little longer hours during the day, also to give relief and partnering with, Mark Center, thank you, that our hours are open a little longer also.
Mr. Luna.
So Liz, the pro rata proposal simply is that you would take a little bit of each project.
Do about 3%.
3% of each project, mm-hmm. and increase the funding for Paso Cristo. So I would move, my preference is to move in that direction. I would hate, you know, Project Crystal does an amazing job in our community, so thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you.
And I had the opportunity to serve dinner in December, and it was very heartwarming, but I understand the need for the security and having Project Crystal here in our community. So, and they've been here a long time, but all of these agencies that deserve the funding that we can provide. I wish we had millions and millions of dollars, I was just telling my colleague, but we don't. So we're going to have to give and take our funding levels to provide what we need to do. So my preference is to go with a pro rata.
Will do.
Jeremy. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. How much time did you, you said that you guys spent a lot of late nights and stuff working on this. How many hours would you say you guys prepared the numbers that you have currently in front of us?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, I wouldn't say hours. You know, once I have those scores in place, it might take me an evening just to get those in ranking them and then looking at what the amount of dollars are. So the whole process, gosh, I'll let you go.
Mayor, Councilman Whitaker, the process generally starts in October. There's an awful lot of pre-planning that goes into the application process before we have a series of pre-public meetings, which informs the public of the availability of the funding. From there, there's the actual application period, which takes about 3 weeks, and there's an extensive evaluation period that takes about another 3 weeks before it goes to our Housing and Community Development Advisory Board. So in terms of hours, it's hard to quantify, but in terms of months, on average, about 6 to 7 months a year.
Okay. Yeah, I guess from my perspective, I just have a hard time. I mean, it sounds like you guys put a lot of time and effort into this, and for me to come here and sit here for 15 minutes and analyze all the work that you've done and then try to change your process seems counterintuitive to me. So my approach is to move forward with whatever you guys recommend, because I have faith that you guys have done a great job in presenting this.
I agree with that. I hesitate to suggest any modifications to what's being presented, but frankly, my suggestion was prompted by a discussion with these folks, with our staff, and they said I said, tell me how this went, and one of the regrets that they shared is, you know what, we think we might have underfunded Paso Cristo. And so that's frankly what's provoking my raising the question. Actually, it was Mr. Glover that raised the question. So I don't think what we're considering doing is really contrary to the process that we've gone through.
Yeah, if the amount of committees and time that is spent in this, I guess, you know, my question at some point becomes, you know, what's the point in having committees or subcommittees if we take the recommendations and change them rather than, I would say, send this back to the committee and say, come back with recommendation. And if that is to, you know, take 3% away from everything to give more money to Paz de Cristo, then so be it. But I just hate the fact that if we come in here and in a few minutes' time, we just change 6 months of work that these committees, I can imagine the frustration that a committee would have if it comes before us and we just simply change the process in a few minutes. That's the only point that I want to make.
Good point. Mr. Freeman.
I think homelessness is a regional problem, and I agree with Councilmember Thompson that homelessness, I feel like if we, yesterday, let me just back up. Yesterday, I took a tour of the river bottom and saw a lot of homelessness in the river bottom, and those people choose, I feel, a lifestyle for whatever reason, and they use our human services within our community. And even though we try to intervene and try to take them out of that cycle, it's still a personal choice. We have established long-term relationships with some of these organizations in our community. I was impressed when we did help Paz de Cristo that our Mesa Police Department was there for security. It's overtime for those officers. They have long-term relationships with the homeless that do come there. I do realize that not everybody there is not a Mesa resident, but it's a regional problem. We have to somehow get a hold of it. I guess what I'm circling back to is I would support a 3% reduction on everything to allow them to be funded. They're a great, strong nonprofit in our community, and I appreciate the service they're doing because personally I can't do that, but I do help in other ways, and so do church and other organizations. So it's a community project, but you know, this funding is like, if we had all the money that we could do this, everybody would be happy, which it won't be, but 3% is where I'm at.
Thank you. Let me throw one other tidbit in. For those who have served at Paz de Cristo, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the things that I'm always impressed by is that, sure, there are some classic homeless people, a lot, that walk into Paz de Cristo, but there are also a lot of working poor that go back to homes in our community, but they don't make enough to make ends meet. And so the food services provided at Paz is a big blessing in their lives. So it's not just the classic, you know, show up on a bike or a shopping cart clientele at Paz de Cristo. There's a lot of working poor. There's a lot of children. It's and to Mr. Freeman's point about security, one of the times that I've been there, I know of two different police officers. Maybe you can correct me. Are there more than two?
Yes, we have four.
Four. I've gotten acquainted with two. One is a wonderful female lieutenant. And she knows the name of every single person that shows up for that line because she does this, you know, over the course of months and years. And she knows the backstory for every person that's in that line. And the same is true for the other Mesa police officer. The other thing I should say about her is that she takes the overtime salary that she earns and she donates it to her church. I think it's a very good thing for Mesa police officers to be providing that function because they have an intimate knowledge and relationship with this high-risk group in our community. I know good things come from that and come from the relationships that our police department has with the folks that come to Paz. Yes.
Yeah, I also agree. I know I understand the time it took to nail it down to these decisions and the application process from the committee, from residents here at Mesa, to look at scoring and those things, which led to the conclusion of these amounts. And, you know, does it mean that we don't make mistakes in the allocation and, you know, having further conversations? So I'm sensitive to what Councilmember Whitaker mentioned, going through this process several times, as my experience when I lived in Chandler and now through this process here, there's always further clarification. And as we look at the future, I believe, as Councilman Freeman also said, it's a regional approach, and we should have tackle these both here in Mesa, but also at a regional level. So I'm sensitive to those aspects as far as funding wise. I would move on to 3%. It pains me, but of course, we don't have all the funding that we need to help support all the issues. I think it's a manageable way to figure this out to support Paz and the rest of the folks here in the city. So,
Mr. Thompson.
And I think I'd probably be remiss if I didn't bring up our Mesa K Ready again. I will continue to bring that up every time. Last year, we were told it was going to be a one-time ask, and here it is again. Last year, it's going to be a one-time ask to do a pilot project, and the rest was going to be fundraising, but yet here it is again. Still don't have a plan in front of us of how the money is going to be used. Again, it's taking public money and putting it towards something that's outside the purview of the city. And again, I'll continue to not support. It's not that I don't support education. I 100% do. I just don't support using our public funding in the city for programs that we don't necessarily oversee. It's not within our job scope as much as it is the education community. So if you're looking for money, there's $60,000 sitting right there.
Mayor and Councilmember Thompson, I just want to clarify. Last year, we gave $60,000 out of our human services, which was general funds. This year, it's out of our CDBG allocation. So those are federal funds, and there is an application that sets out what that program is.
Well, federal funds are still tax dollars.
Yes, they are. And Liz, I, of course, am compelled to respond. Last year, I think actually our $60,000 came from the ABC, which is philanthropy. And so I think directing philanthropy to a worthy project like school readiness is very appropriate. Similarly, this year, the CDBG money is money that we're given from the federal government that has to be spent on at-risk populations. The amount of money that we're proposing to spend on the Mesa Ready program, $60,000, out of a total of HUD and Human Service funds that we're allocating today, about $4.5 million, you know, that's about 1%. And to think that we ought to allocate these federal funds that have been given to us targeted for at-risk populations to spend 1% of that money on a school readiness program, to me, seems dramatically underfunding the problem. So we are not broadening the scope of city of the city's mission. We have been in the early literacy business since the day we opened our first library in the city of Mesa. So this is not mission creep at all. This is something that we have done and will continue to do, and it's a big part of our mission. We're given this money by the federal government to spend on these purposes. We're not spending general fund money. We're allocating federal money the way that the federal government has asked us to do it. So I don't remember anyone suggesting that this was going to be a one-time, that the school readiness program was going to be something that the city would look at on a one-time basis. My vision of this is that it's in perpetuity. School readiness will always be an issue in our community. And as long as the federal government gives us money to direct it at-risk populations, I think it's appropriate that we spend it in the most important way. And to spend 1% of it on a school readiness program, to me, seems more than appropriate.
I guess we're moving on from homelessness. So my question, as it pertains to the Mesa pre-K, is I had asked for specific metrics as far as, I think when I approved the funds last year, to say, well, let's show me the program and then, like, what are we measuring to determine if this program is successful? So I guess I struggle with the fact that this is already on our list to approve today, but we haven't heard a presentation as far as the success or how the program has gone for the first year, which I'd love to hear more.
Yes, Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, Natalie Lewis with the City Manager's Office. We are still in the midst of the demonstration project. And so what our goal is to, we're going to be measuring the results of the demonstration project, which went from March through middle of March through the middle of June. And so we're working with 50 families right now, and we're measuring lots of different things that we had talked to you about earlier. So we're still in the midst of measuring those. We've been fortunate enough that the Bloomberg organization and Harvard are going to be providing a fellow this summer to us, a graduate student, and we're going to be working with that graduate student to put together a really detailed report with all of the different metrics and to bring that back to City Council.
I guess I'm a little confused on the process. So today, are we voting to allocate funds for the second year of this service? And how can I vote for a second year to allocate funds if I haven't seen the results from the first year?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, sometimes that happens with our new projects because of the time it takes us to get the contract and new projects going. So often in second year, we do come across that issue. So it really is incumbent upon you to decide if you're willing to take the next funding year based on minimal information. I mean, you've gotten some information today about what's happening, but that it's not unusual for us to have to put forward a funding application that hasn't been fully reported on yet.
If you had to take the top three metrics from the program today to determine its success, what would you say those top three metrics are, and how would you grade yourself?
I think I'd have to think about that a little bit. The purpose of the demonstration project is about measuring and measuring impact and income, but it's also about testing the concept and really making sure that before we go full in, that what we're doing is the exact right thing. So a couple of things that I have seen some real progress on is really understanding the population that we're serving and making absolutely certain that as we move forward, we're serving a population that we can actually help and assist with. And so we have had a lot of really interesting and things that kind of pull at your heartstrings. We've been working really hard to wrap these families with some different kinds of social services, because the whole idea is that you try to lift the families at the same time you're lifting the children. And so we have had families, we have one family that has six children under 13, and that we have wrapped services around them, and we've done so much for them. We've had another family who's now understands that having her children sleep all day is not the right thing for her children. And so she's now understanding more about the importance of early childhood education. So the health and social service aspect has been really helpful and good in giving us insights into the population. We have also been able to measure how they're using the Miss Humblebees in the library, and that's going very well. And so I would say that would be a really good and important metric, that it's working, and working with the mentors has been working. The social and emotional side of things, we have learned through this demonstration project that we're going to need to create some additional incentives to make sure that we can help these families who are really struggling get to them. So we're working on some new ideas for that as well. So there's really three legs to the program and to the process, and this really has been a time of testing and understanding and adjusting. But metrics right now, I mean, if I were to just throw some out, I don't think they're going to be as helpful to you right now until we get to the end. And even when we get to the end, just to be honest with you, Councilmember Whitaker, it's a five-month program. So this is really, the whole idea is to test the concept and to make sure that what we're doing for the first school year is really something that will work and will benefit Mesa and our residents.
Okay. From my side, I don't have a problem if we move forward with the second year. I think to John's point about $60,000 being a minimal amount or 1% is an issue. I understand the passion of the mayor and the vice mayor on this subject, so I'm not going to object. But moving forward, like, I can't stress enough to the point that if we don't have some form of metrics to determine if this project is successful, and I have no desire to keep approving it moving forward, because I think that we're just setting ourselves up for failure. So I don't know, if you can't measure the metrics of success of a program, then how do you continue with the program? It makes no sense to me. We've sat here and asked every nonprofit in here to justify the means of the dollars that we're allocating to them, from Paz de Cristo to how many people they serve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But to our own program that's presented by ran out of the Mesa library, mm-hmm. we're not holding ourselves to any metrics. And
we let me be clear, we are holding ourselves to metrics. So, I mean, we're going to be looking at the number of participants and making sure that we're getting the number of participants and how many of those participants and how it helps us move our needle. We're going to be looking at how they use the Miss Humblebee's Academy and how many lessons they're doing and if they're doing that. We're going to be looking at how many of the social emotional programs that they're coming to make sure that we're getting them to our programs, and we're doing evaluation and surveys with the parents so that they understand what it is. We're going to be measuring the children. They've gotten a pre-assessment of the children, and they'll have a post-assessment of the children. So there's a lot of different metrics. We're going to be measuring ourselves by how much money we actually bring in from the private sector. So we have a team of people that are looking very specifically at metrics. So we clearly understand where you're coming from, and we agree with you, and we want to make decisions based on data and information and experience, which is why we're doing this demonstration program.
So, Mayor and Council, we can measure, like almost all the agencies here, how many people we serve. We have that number right now. I think we're going to go to a higher standard with this project than any other, because we're not asking the agencies today how many of those homeless people are you helping today that are not going to be homeless a year from now. The difference in this project, the metric we're struggling with, is not just how many we serve. Everybody's doing that. Everybody out there, every agency, that's their metric. We can give you that number today, 50. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to tell you is how many of that 50 are going to be better off to ready to go into the school system, into kindergarten, ready before they get to kindergarten. So we kind of have to, we're going through this process of preparation, because our ultimate outcome is when they get into that kindergarten class, they're going to outperform the peers that didn't have the same type of opportunity. But we can answer the question just like every agency today. How many homeless did you serve? We can tell you, they say 7,000. How many pre-K students did we help? We can tell you that number today. But we're going to hold ourselves to a higher standard because the outcome is what we're trying to achieve, and that's what we're trying to get to. And so we're going to work on that metric. But it's also going to be about leveraging outside resources for the city. We have, unlike any other project before, are leveraged with the school district, engaged with the school district, resources that they've committed, along with Mesa United Way. So this is kind of unique, where we have now outside groups working together collaboratively, each bringing either in kind or, in this case, actual dollars to the table. So we'll work on those metrics, but we can give you the same metric everybody else is giving you today, 50. And that we're trying to work, maybe make it a little more of an outcome of what are we trying to achieve, and that is the achievement is making these students better prepared for their formal education.
Yeah, and I would agree, and I think that's great that we're actually setting the standard higher of how we're actually impacting their lives. But going back to my original point, like, I would love this. So what are the top three things that we're going to use to?
We owe that to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Luna.
No, just to clarify, one of the things that we're looking at is educational gains. That's the whole purpose behind this whole project. The other thing that we need to speak on is that the $60,000 we were allocated last year, that's just a single source. We also applied. We were fortunate to get a First Things First grant. We got a funding from the Mesa Educational Foundation. We're leveraging our external resources with Mesa Public Schools. We have our social service agency. We have United Food Bank, which is providing meals for these families. We have a number of agencies that are working together as a community to collaborate to help kids of need. So this is a very important project. At the end of the day, we want kids to go to kindergarten, be ready to learn, just like all their peers that have more experiences than these kids do. So that we can certainly measure. Once, you know, typically in education, it takes a full year to measure. We're at a disadvantage. We only have 5 months. But I know that we will have some significant gains. As these kids go into kindergarten, they'll be ready to learn.
And something that Natalie said a moment ago, I don't want us to lose. We have a Harvard fellow that is coming to Mesa, spending the summer, spending full time working on preparing an assessment of this program. But as Mr. Luna indicated, it's too early really to draw any conclusions. It's literally a month or two into this, and you're talking about measuring the performance of a four-year-old. You know, it's frankly going to take, I think, years to do. You do assessments before they go to the program and assessments at the end of the program, and then you do assessments, you know, a year or two into it to see how the cohort is performing. Was the advantages that they experienced as a result of preschool, is it maintaining? I mean, This program is going to be measured every which way. One of the great things about having it being, we're riding shotgun for the school district, and the school district is great at measuring things. They test kids every which way. So we are very much going to be, the assessment is a big part of this program. But I think you have to be a little bit patient. You have to literally, you know, give it a few months or maybe even a year or two before you can measure data against one another. And to the issue of funding, Mr. Luna yesterday had a great meeting with a funder for a six-figure multi-year commitment. I had a similar meeting with a different funder 2 weeks ago. Showing that the city has some skin in this game is attracting funders to come in and help us do this. Now, if we're not successful at that, this is never going to be successful if the city is the sole funder of this program. And I think we all agree to that. We're not going to do that. But the city has to put some skin in the game so that we can have the types of meetings that Mr. Luna had yesterday, so that the philanthropists will say, well, okay, the city's doing 60. We'll consider a multi-year six-figure commitment to this project. So this program's in the infancy. We need to allow it to mature a little bit before we can draw conclusions. Nobody is going to continue to advocate for a program that's not receiving support outside of the city and that can't demonstrate measurable gains. But it's way too early to draw that conclusion yet. Any other? Okay, thank you. And now, before we have a vote on this, and I have another question, and it has to do with the category of economic development. Yes, and so I particularly thank you. I know there was a passionate plea made during the committee meeting that resulted in the shift of about $400,000, you know, and I respect that and I endorse that, frankly. I think the need that was presented at our committee meeting was very compelling, and had I been sitting on the committee, I would have done the same thing in response to the need that was presented. But Liz, help us. My understanding is that there are some additional funds that we anticipate being able to put into the CDBG bucket over the next few months relative to some houses that have been improved, being sold. So there may be a couple, two or three or four more $100,000 in that category.
Yes.
And so ultimately, we might be able to fund some of the projects that we had to skip over during the committee hearing. Is that generally true?
Mayor, yes. We have the NSP 3 program that has to be closed out in the next few months. When that closes out, those funds get reverted over to roll over into the CDBG, but they can only be used for certain type of activities. So, for instance, that benefit low to moderate income. So we can, we do anticipate doing a supplemental request, a substantial amendment, when we come back once those funds have been put into the CDBG pot. And so we do anticipate doing that probably in the fall when you return from the summer break.
And Liz, help us understand. I know this is fairly complicated in terms of the HUD requirements, but the types of money that we're talking about, would economic development, for example, mm-hmm. the facade improvement program that kind of fell on the cutting room floor mm-hmm. during the committee meeting, yes. Would that be an eligible expense for that type of funding?
With those NSP dollars rolling over, it would be difficult to fund the facade improvement with those particular funds, because that is difficult to demonstrate the direct low to moderate income benefit to that population. So again, we can do a variety of things, but if it downtown facade, we are doing it as it does not have a direct link to low to moderate benefits. So it would be difficult to use those rollover funds for the downtown facade.
Right. So for that reason, would it make sense? And if we know we're going to have $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000 mm-hmm. a month or two from now, to use those funds that could be used for economic development purposes, i.e. the facade improvement, to allocate that money now, and then the child crisis project that is worthy and I think we're all ready to commit to funding that project, fund that out of the money that's coming in, because that is appropriate to earmark for low income projects. Does that make sense?
Mayor, I would agree. Yes.
So in order for us to set the stage to fund both of those funds, both of those needs, would we, if we took action today on allocating the CDBG money, would that preclude us from being able to do that? In other words, should we table some of the CDBG allocations to set the stage for being able to do that?
All right, so this is new to me. Well, I've kind of heard generally, but so is the dollar amount, what is the dollar amount from NSP?
So we don't have a final dollar amount. We anticipate it's going to be at the minimum $300,000. It could be higher than that.
And the request for the facades was?
It's $250,000.
$250,000?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you wouldn't have to defund the entire amount of the child crisis campus expansion?
We could do somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000 for the child crisis now, and do $250,000 for facade. We could do that.
But then child crisis would have to come back in the next process?
Well,
how would that, work?
So, city manager, and the best way I can explain it, the council can choose to allocate that without a competitive process. So we can come back with a recommendation to fund child crisis, and if there's any additional funds, we could put that out competitively. But it does not have to be a competitive process.
The request for child crisis originally was
It was originally 1.5.
Okay.
And then they agreed to the $440,000 that they could work with that to still make the project.
Would they come out ahead if we were able to reduce them now, fund the facade, and then give the full allocation to them in the fall? Then they would they end up with an amount closer to the $500,000?
Yes.
Than where they are today? So just trying to think, if I'm them, would this is a better idea to wait and get a higher amount through this program funds from NSP that's going to close out, versus taking the dollars now? This way you get both the facade improvements. We have developers in the downtown area that are would like to take advantage of that to help them with their projects. I'm aware of that. Fully fund that, and then whatever's remaining, continue to keep that in the child crisis campus expansion, but with direction from council that when we come back with the NSP, then to fully fund their request with the remaining dollars. So I'm putting this out here.
I think if I remember, the child crisis, the whole reason we did it was because the Child Crisis Center was under a time restraint on receiving the funds and making the purchase that they needed to make. So they needed the funds now versus 8 months from now.
Mayor and Council Member Thompson, just so you know, any funding that they get, if we were to fully fund child crisis right now, they probably won't get those funds until the fall anyways. So we think the timing will be very similar in nature based on what our plans are.
This is on a federal funding basis anyway.
Yes.
So this is an October date.
Yes.
Okay.
So
should they go back and refigure it and then bring it back to our committee and let us
we have to reset the whole hearing process.
I think back to Jeremy's issue is, you know, that now we're kind of overriding the committee and what Liz and her group have done. So if we're going to start changing things up, we probably ought to come back through committee and then bring that back up to council to make sure that everybody's in agreement.
Well, let's remind ourselves what the step-by-step, the Child Crisis asked for $1.5 million.
Yeah.
The staff recommendation was 40,000.
It
was 40,000.
Oh, that was staff.
And then after the committee meeting where Tori, bless your heart, made a very compelling pitch, it went from 40,000 to 440,000. And so now I think what we're suggesting is that we follow through with that, with the recommendation made by our committee. But that we do it a couple of months from now so as to allow us to use the money that we know is going to come in a few months, and then be able to fund. The other thing that was recommended by the committee process before it got to council was to fund the facade improvement. Mm-hmm. So this would actually allow us to respect the process and do what the process has recommended, to do both of those things. But I know, Tori, you're present, and we're talking a lot about you. Would this present a problem? Do you mind coming forward and just sharing? Would this fit into Child Crisis's plans if we delayed the funding that you are entitled to per our previous recommendation.
Good morning, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members, and staff. Thank you for asking me to come before you. And I hear everything that's being talked about and the need for the facade and the additional dollars that could be coming through from NSP instead of CDBG. And it appears that this would not stall our project at all, and we would be very happy to trust the council, trust the process. We do feel that the city of Mesa, the staff has definitely been behind us. All of you have been behind us on this project that started 2 years ago. So I do feel comfortable at this time leaving it up to the council and the city staff to determine when we receive these funds, knowing that you all are going to be behind this project that is a phased project. As you know, childhood poverty is growing in the city of Mesa. We are the child welfare agency headquartered here in Mesa, 40 years history working with the city of Mesa. And so we know that you are going to continue to support us. And so we are definitely okay and trusting the city staff and the council and the committee to fund us. I just would like to reiterate the request was $1.5 million, and as much of that as possible would really help us with this project. We do have a big vision. It's going to happen over the next 5 years. Really tried to reach out to all of you talking about skin in the game. This is really important for us to have that stamp of approval from the city of Mesa to continue to fundraise from philanthropists in the community to support our vision of growing services to the children and families in Mesa.
Thank you, Tori. Thank you for all that you do. Mr. Glover made a point earlier, too, that I'd like to clarify. The outcome of our vote today is to actually begin a public comment period, and it would actually be May or June before this is put into concrete.
Yes.
And so I think if the recommendation from today was let's have some flexibility to allow, you know, for this scheme that we just talked about where all of the projects that were recommended get funded and we allow that to kind of percolate for the next month or two, that's not the end of the world.
Mayor, it's not the end of the world. You can always change your mind. I want to make sure you understand that. If you provide us the direction today, those would be the funding recommendations that go out to public comment. We will come back. We will let you know what those public comments are. And if there's any adjustments at that point in time, you can do that. If we do make adjustments, it would require us to go back out to public comment.
Yes. That's always the key in this process is that today was the intention was kind of to get council as close to what you really felt like your final recommendation is, because the idea is the comment period goes out there and then you take action on that. If you were to change it again, then it has to go back out again for public comment and then another action. So it's 30, 45 days.
30 days
in between.
And we do have some funding deadlines that has to be into HUD by August 16th. So you're on break during that period of time, so it would be very difficult to meet that timeline.
Yeah, and I'm not proposing that we say let's punt and kick this can down the road. I'm saying let's do articulate what the proposal is. But again, if something doesn't unfold the way that we expect it to, we'll still be able to address that.
Right.
Mr. Freeman.
Liz, by the way, we're never on break. Just why don't we recap the proposals we've talked about, and then maybe we can move forward on some type of decision-making.
I have a question before we recap. Since we're bringing the facade program up, can you briefly remind me who the beneficiaries are of the facade program and what it entails exactly, or what the original purpose of the program was?
I'll start. I don't know if Jeff would face
you. Here's Jeff.
Jeff, come on.
Morning, Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, Jeff McVeigh with the City Manager's Office. The facade program is to work with downtown property owners and businesses. We had a target area of Main Street, essentially, from Country Club to Center Street, and it directly benefits, the benefit goes to the property owners to do design work, create a facade design, and then to do the construction work. The true beneficiary in our application, what we're really after, is the economic development that comes from that. So we're trying to benefit low to mod income individuals by creating more opportunity for job creation. We the studies all prove out that when you do facade improvement, it increases retail sales, increases foot traffic, and it will increase property values. All of those things hopefully will lead to increased employment opportunities for low to moderate income people.
I'm sorry, Jeff, remind us, who owns the facades?
Mayor, we don't own the facades. We own the colonnades. And a big part of this is the removal of the colonnades to allow the facade improvement to happen. And then once the facade improvement would be done, everything attached to the facade at that point would be owned by the property owners of the building, the building owners versus the city owning the colonnade.
So the end result of this would be that the city owns the boxes, the stucco boxes that kind of hide these 100-year-old buildings from the street. And the end result of this would be we'd demolish those colonnades, at least on a demonstration project in front of a few businesses that have applied for this. And then we would no longer, going forward, there'd be a new facade that would be created, and we would be out of the business of owning those colonnades.
Correct. And the maintenance costs that goes with that.
And this is supposed to benefit low to moderate income individuals. Remind me, how does that?
Currently, we did a lot of comparative research across the country. Facade improvement programs prove that they do increase retail activity, so increase sales, increase property values. All of those things will hopefully lead to higher and better uses to our downtown businesses or downtown buildings, which will lead to greater employment opportunities for the low to moderate income people.
When we approve the ASU IGA, what percentage of property value increase do you think the surrounding properties from Country Club to Center saw on an average?
I couldn't even venture a guess, Councilmember Whitaker.
Okay. It's my opinion, given how we're allocating these funds today, that the fact that we've moved forward with an IGA with ASU to build a building anywhere from a $60 to $75 million price tag, that in itself is going to spur economic growth downtown. I would estimate, based on talking to downtown business owners, that their property values, just by simply creating that IGA, have already seen an increase of about 50%. So I don't necessarily know that the facade program is relevant at this point. You know, I think once those cranes go in the air, we're going to see I don't think we're going to need to subsidize downtown business owners anymore. Would you agree or disagree?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, I would respectfully disagree, honestly. Our colonnades are a hindrance to retail activity. When you are on the street, driving down the street, those colonnades are very heavy, bulky, and they're deep. They don't benefit retail activity on our main street. They actually hinder retail activity because you can't see the storefronts. Once those colonnades are removed, that will actually increase retail activity, and it will have an additional benefit on property values because the retail activity will be higher. The real rub here is that the city owns the colonnades, so we can't just expect the property owners to take those down. They're our property. We have to be involved some way to allow that to happen. And when we first proposed a facade improvement program, we kind of described the chicken and egg problem. Which one has to come first? If the city removes the colonnades and just takes those away, then we have 30 years of buildings that have had very little maintenance facing the street, and that will be aesthetically not very nice. But we might have some property owners that are ready to do a facade improvement, but they won't do so because the colonnades are there. So we're trying to take away the issue, and that's the colonnades, so that we can get to the benefit.
And the people that have applied for this facade improvement programs, are these small business owners, or are they large developers?
Currently, we have 10 properties that are in the program right now. They are all small business owners. So they're either the business owners themselves, or they're the property owners of the building themselves. So they're either local property owners or local business owners. The interest that we're receiving now are from the larger development community that has been buying properties more recently. So the Caliber Investment Group is one of those that has several properties that they're interested in, but we also do have other small business owners that are interested in this as well for a second round.
How many properties are owned by Caliber and how many are owned by small business owners?
Of the properties that are interested?
Yes.
I believe it's three properties that are Caliber and one that is, or two that are small business and local.
I thought there was 10 total.
Well, of the 10 total, none are Caliber properties.
This is additional.
Of the 10 that are in the program now, they're all local small business owners or property owners. Of the four that are coming forward now that would like the next round, three are Caliber and two are local.
And that will be what in next year's budget consideration for that facade program, or at what point are we talking about?
That was the application. That was for the funding that we were requested this round.
Councilman, prior year, the council funded the facade improvement at I forget what level, 325. Yeah. With the idea this was going to be a multiple kind of effort, and so that first effort of 325 is the 10.
Yes.
And then now we're coming around for the second round, and that's the five right now that we know of. So
the 10 have already been approved last year. Those are moving forward.
Right.
We're working on getting the construction bids so that we can get those.
Yes.
And how much money are we talking about funding right now?
For this round?
For the next five?
$250,000.
$250,000. Okay, so it's my opinion that development groups like Caliber that are composed of multi-millionaire individuals don't need the subsidies on the back of these programs where we're taking away from our homeless and other programs. There's no way that I would, and I don't know what the rest of council is. If you guys want to subsidize millionaires, feel free, but I'm not doing that.
Are we talking different buckets here of allocation of monies? So yes. There's clarification on that.
So on what would fund the downtown facade is the non-public service side of CDBG. Most of our homeless programs are coming from public service, CDBG, ESG, and human services.
Some communities use their CDBG dollars to a large extent to spur economic development. I think we traditionally have taken more a social service approach, and this recommendation was vetted through our process. It came back from the citizen committees and from staff recommending that we do some, again, the bulk of it goes to social services, but that we use some of these dollars for economic development. Is that generally a fair way to describe the process?
Mayor, that is correct.
Yes. And Mayor, also what makes it unique is we're trying to do projects, not programs, mm-hmm. so that they're capital projects. Mm-hmm. That fits well with CDBG funds because it's dollars we can spend quickly, and it's kind of one and done and get it over with. So that's what matches up. We've, in the past, attempted in downtown to do a lot of different projects with federal dollars, even to the point where we've worked to try to put sprinkler systems in some of the downtown businesses to help them meet code. So it's not unusual, especially in the downtown area, to look for ways to provide federal funds for economic development purposes.
Thank you. At some point, we need to make a motion. Are there any additional questions or discussions for staff? Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, before that, yes. Yeah, so if there's no additional questions, please recap where we're at and what we need to move.
So if I understand correctly, under the human services category, we would fully fund at $50,000 Paso Cristo by reducing the other projects under human services by equal share, which is approximately 3%. Then we would, I'm hearing that we would want to fund downtown facade at $250,000. Child crisis would get $190,570, with making up to the $500,000 that was recommended by CCD for the child crisis.
I think that number was $440,000.
Well, this was $440,000. Yes, $440,000. We had originally tried to get as close to $500,000 with the CCD committee. Based on what funds we had available at that point, it was only up to $440,000. But when we have the NSP funds, staff, we will come back with that recommendation to fund them without having that go through a competitive process.
But be clear, Mayor, I think what we would like to do maybe for their patience is to fund with there will be available funds. I think we could get them to the $500,000 mm-hmm. mark for waiting and at that point. Is that what
that,
we're saying?
That's
so
correct.
They'll come out on the better end with the NSP dollars.
So Tori will be rewarded for her patience
yes.
Because we should have a little more money in the second round.
Yes.
Okay.
Mayor, I support what's just been recapped.
Thank you. So is that a motion?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Motion, there's been a motion and a second to approve the what's been described by Liz. Thank you, Liz. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
We have Mr. Thompson and Mr. Whitaker, nay. So it passes 5-2. Thank you very much. Thanks again for all the work that's gone into this. The next meeting, or I'm sorry, the next item on our agenda is item 1B, to hear a presentation and discuss an overview of revenue generated from sales and property taxes.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. With me today, I have one of our Deputy Budget Directors, Ryan Wimmer. And he's going to join me to talk about really kind of a follow-up to some items that were mentioned at the strategic planning session, where we really kind of talked about some potential election, potential questions to go on the ballot in November of 2018. And we wanted to come back and bring you just an overview as we start talking about property tax and how that relates to a possible bond election, and also sales tax and how that would relate to a possible election on the November 18th ballot. So we kind of want to go over that. So Ryan is going to kind of tackle the property tax and give you kind of an overview of the property tax here in Mesa, secondary property tax that we have here, and how that goes through that. And then I'll tackle the sales tax at the end.
Good morning. So where does a Mesa resident's property tax dollar go? This is, excuse me, this is for a typical City of Mesa resident. So someone who lives in Mesa Public School District and not in a community facilities district. You can see that the majority of the a property tax dollar in the City of Mesa goes to the public school districts. Only 9% of this, or of a property tax dollar of a Mesa resident, goes to the City of Mesa. And we just wanted to give you a little perspective as to the magnitude of the city's property tax.
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you when you're right out of the blocks here, but the 6% other special districts, that's really for the only for those, we only have, we're talking about Eastmark, right?
No.
Or is there other,
no.
Oh, okay. We're not talking about CFDs, we're talking about other.
We're talking about the county special healthcare district, we're talking about the
okay.
EVIT,
thank you.
The county library district, the Arizona, yes, yeah, there's EVIT, there's the Arizona Central Water Conservation District.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Fractions.
I'm with you now.
Yeah, this does not include a...
Yeah. Does not include CFDs. These are special
CFDs.
Districts for these special projects.
Right.
Gotcha.
So it's a typical resident who does not live in a community facilities district.
Gotcha.
I'm kind of like you, Mayor. I hate to interrupt when you're right out of the chute. The majority of my district is either Queen Creek Schools or Gilbert Schools. And so would you be able to redo this and provide that to me for both of those as well?
Yes.
Yeah. And Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, if...
Thompson.
I'm
Thompson.
Sorry.
It's okay.
But thank you.
You're welcome, and I'm sorry. The Queen Creek and Higley and Tempe and Gilbert school districts are all part of... residents of Mesa all live in those districts. And, you know, and I'll get you this dollar for that, for those districts. But they all are fairly similar if you look at the rates that those districts pay. So there are two types of property tax that exist in the state, primary property tax and secondary property tax. Primary property tax is used to pay for general city operations, while secondary property taxes are used for specific purposes like debt service on general obligation bonds. As you know, the city does not have a primary property tax since the 1940s. The city does have a secondary property tax since 2010. And the formula for property tax, and this is kind of the key formula to always remember, is that property value times the tax rate equals the tax levy. So the value times rate equals the levy. There are two values for every property in the city of, in the state, in the City of Mesa. There's a full cash value and a limited property value. The full cash value is not limited in any way to an increase year over year. the limited property value is limited to, on most property, it can only increase by 5% a year. And it's important, that value is important because that's the value that's used for tax, for property tax purposes, the limited value. And you can see the values run a couple years behind the market, so you can see the impact of the Great Recession and then the subsequent recovery coming out of that low several years ago.
Ryan, this is interesting because for council, you can see that because of that cap on the growth and value that's applied to the tax rate, it has, it kind of modifies the curve up. What's interesting is that blue column is actually the full cash value. So that's really reflective of the actual values and the increase in values. But because it's, make sure I'm saying this right, Ryan, but because of what we can assess for property tax purposes is capped at 5%, we're not able to capture that full growth that's taking place in the values overall for the city. But the good news is since 15, 16, 16, 17, 17, 18, 18, 19, you can see both in the full cash value has been significantly growing, which that's both new growth as well as increased value in the current existing base. And then behind that becomes the green bar, which is just growing only at the allowed state cap of 5%. So the good news is there's a lot more, there's even more growth in the base than what we can actually capture in the property tax. So it's the good sign of a healthy community with all these values continuing to grow. And we'll show you here in a second what that's made up of.
But for City of Mesa tax collection purposes, it really doesn't matter because we adjust the rate. We go after a fixed number.
Correct.
So property values are going to go up and down, but we're still going to get our same.
We have some really good news for, have good news for everyone here in just a second, Mayor, because as our value goes up, and we, because like you said, there's a fixed amount, we have a significant rate decrease. For as we've been decreasing the rate the last 2 years?
Four
years, but we have a significant one to propose for this year.
So as was discussed, the property value increase from this year to next year is shown on this slide for the taxable value, the net assessed value. The increase in property value, the taxable increase in value was $229 million or 7.5%. And it's important to realize that 5.5% of that 7.5% is due to the appreciation on existing property, but 2% or $63 million of the increase is due to new property being constructed or.
That's pretty exciting to see that new growth number coming in there.
And because of that growth, both in appreciation of values and in new property, as Chris mentioned, the rate is being driven down in order to collect the same levy. So that top line there, you see the rate is going to go, if the proposal is to reduce the rate from $1.09 this year to $1.02 next year, which is a 7% decrease, to achieve the same levy of $33.4 million, that second line. And the impact on the median homeowner in the city is a reduction of more than 2%. And you can think of that in terms of the new growth is adding to the property tax base. And so the average homeowner, even though the value's gone up and the rate's gone down by even more because there's more property to spread that levy over.
So this is why we talk about broad base, seeing new development, leveraging opportunities for new growth in the city. This is big. I mean, anytime the newspapers, usually the headlines are about tax rates. Our tax rate will be going down by 7%. That's significant. Now, and people say, yeah, but my rates went up. Well, my values went up. Your value's still going to go up, but you're still going to get a reduction because of new growth, even that at over 2%. Now, this is a median, right? So we're taking kind of this general one shot. But for many of our residents, just to continue to maintain the current debt service payment, we will see they'll see a reduction in their property taxes.
So since the property tax levy, the secondary levy, was instituted in fiscal year 10, this is the city's levy by purpose, so why we've levied each portion of it. You can see over the last 4 years and then proposed for next year is the same flat levy of $33.4 million. And if you take that same flat levy over the 5 years, you can see that the rate has declined each of the last 4 years because of this issue. Value's going up, levy staying the same, so the rate drops.
Mayor, Council, also, if you go back to that previous slide, I think it's important to note the dark blue on the bottom and the orange on top, those two are related specifically to, well, I guess I should say more than that. The blue, the red, and the orange make up, and there's some street money in there, but the rest of that is public safety related. That's fire stations and police things, and there's a lot of streets in there, but those, that's a significant commitment over the last 5 years of our response to both streets and public safety. That's what's reflected here in these numbers.
Just to give you a perspective on the impact of a possible 2018 general obligation bond election, if voters authorize an additional $10 million in project spending, whether it be on public safety projects or streets or parks, whatever's decided, the annual cost to a medium homeowner would be, in this case, $10 million would be an additional $2.89, and the other amounts are just scaled, so $50 million in bonds would result in a $14 impact to the annual impact to the average homeowner. And just to give you perspective, the median homeowner property value in Mesa for next year is estimated to be $209,000. So that's a median home value.
That's what we're using.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember when we did. I guess the last bond authorization we sought for was in the parks in
2013
at about 70 million. And at that time, I think we indicated we believed that was about a $25 impact to the average resident, I think. So 100 million is less than 30. So we're one of the things that we'll need to get feedback from council, you know, as we start bringing projects. I mean, believe me, I can bring you a lot more than $100 million worth of projects. Is just kind of start thinking about where are we comfortable if we were to move forward kind of inside this range or more than this. We just gave you, these are numbers that are easy to add to and look at and kind of get a range. So it's just something we need to be thinking about as we begin to put a scope or a sizing of what the bonds may look like as we look at projects. So it just kind of gives you an idea of what the cost would be to a property owner.
The question, how long are the GO bonds term?
What's the assumption we use?
We sell GO bonds. All of them are a 20-year term.
So it's safe to assume that the total cost to the median homeowner is a 20 times multiplier to all of these numbers, or would it be different?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker.
This is the annual cost, and it goes for 20 years. I'm assuming I can multiply this by 20 to determine the actual total cost.
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, yes.
Okay.
The cost would be over 20 years, exactly. And after that 20 years, in theory, the cost would drop off.
To zero.
For these bonds. But there's more bonds out there.
Yes.
Obviously, right now, the average homeowner is paying, what is it, $130 a month. So that's for all the prior debt going forward.
130
a year, sorry.
A year.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. 130 a year. Sorry. Yes.
And so going forward, some of that 130 is going to drop off, you know, every five or 10 years as the bonds are retired. And
not only that, Mayor, just look at, for example, this year, from last year to this year, it dropped. And we didn't change anything. So it's the same bonds that were outstanding. The levy or the principal, the payment, is debt service is the same to 33.4, but because of new growth, the payment is actually going to drop. So it, you know, there's a lot of different variables that go into there. But typically, as what we're seeing, if you can go back to the graph that shows all the new growth, eventually, every year, our base is going to continue to grow up to 5%. So we know that that opportunity will continue. There's a lag in here, so we know that we still have a few more years of growth in the base, which eventually will begin continue to offset those costs. New growth is what will really help us the most.
So
that what would that do? Is that would take that about $30 a year as new. That's based on today's assessed values. So as new growth comes into the city, that would actually decrease the impact to the median right. homeowner because it's going to spread out over a larger base. But right now, based on today's assessment, it would be about $30.
So by new growth, are you talking houses, rooftops?
Both. Commercial as well as new residential. All new growth is included.
Because my fear is that more new growth brings on more issues to city services.
Sure.
So does more growth negate any offsets that we're, or does it offset? You know, I'm getting
No. So Councilor Thompson, it's a great question that we have a discussion about. What is the best kind of new growth? You know, because there are different types of even in the residential component. You know that some growth of if it's really high density, let's say multifamily, if it were just all that. Obviously, we know over periods of time that can create impacts on services to the city, but it also creates a volume of people into your community that may be spending money. Or do you want the lower density, higher value homes that don't, that bring value but don't necessarily require as much services? We've been having this discussion too about high-end water users on the industrial side that consume a tremendous amount of our water resources, but it's 1 meter. They're paying a significant amount for that water, but they provide almost no, or they require almost no city services. Versus a residential subdivision. So to me, I think the right answer is it's a mix. I think it's the right blend, and we don't want to go one too far or the other, because I think all of them kind of you could argue for the benefit of each. But you're right. I think we have to be careful, especially when we have requests for large annexations. We're always sensitive to, how is that going to impact our service response in that. But new growth has been very helpful for us because not only in the property tax side, but where we also see the benefit, of course, is in the enterprise fund. And we see more meters, we see more consumption, and that helps out in that fund. And we'll show you that next week, I guess, or this later today,
well,
I guess.
For the audit and finance.
Yeah, the audit and finance, the enterprise fund, seeing that growth is certainly helping that fund also.
Are there any additional questions on property tax?
Well, I appreciate we're setting the stage for future discussions about potential bond packages.
Right.
And so what would help me kind of understand that, too, is as I know, did we lose the ability to refinance municipal bonds in the recent federal legislation? That's one way that we've experienced some savings over time, but I'm afraid we might have lost that ability. Is that correct?
Mayor, we the new tax law that was passed earlier recently, I'm not sure if it was this year or last year, it did preclude remove from our ability to perform advance refundings, which means when bonds are callable, we used to be able to issue new bonds and then set aside the money to pay off the old bonds when they became callable. So that's no longer possible. We can still refund bonds that become when they become callable. So advance refunding we can no longer do. Current refundings we continue to do. So yeah, it did. You're right that it did. It is going to limit our future refunding opportunities.
And any refinancing too has to presume that we're having interest rate savings, and a lot of the bonds that we sold early on, we got very competitive rates, and the rates are actually going the different direction these days. So, to your point, Mayor, it's probably less likely than it has been in the past that we'll be able to use that to help.
Even if we could,
we did so well early on in this program with low rates that we don't expect they'll see anything lower than that right now.
And Mayor, I would just add, this year we won't have any refundings. We will have a defeasance of utility bonds, which is just paying them off early. The next several years, if interest rates don't rise too fast, too high, we do expect to have refundings in the next several years, depending on the interest rate environment.
Yeah, just depending on. We'll talk more about the defeasance. The defeasance is important, too, for the city because it reduces our debt.
So I guess one way to look at this is if we are going to be retiring some debt over the next few years, and we wanted to make the argument to the voters that we're just going to maintain the level of debt or maintain the hit that you're going to take on your annual property tax bill by replacing some of the bond debt that's being retired with new bond debt for new projects, that would be an interesting chart to look at.
We have that chart. I don't think we brought it today, but Mayor, we are, because we didn't start issuing secondary property tax. We were very late, obviously. We're fairly new in this process because we didn't do it until 2010. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, most cities have been doing this for decades, and we're just recently in the game. So it's not necessarily in the, I don't know, what's 10-year period of time. It's we're adding to that. But when you look out at the tail end of the debt service, kind of as debt service kind of comes off the table as others get paid off, you see that happening later out. But that's probably 10 or 15 years out in the future, Ryan.
Yeah, Mayor, Chris, I would say that since we first issued 20-year bonds in 2010, those would drop off in 2030. You can think of it that way. But if you look at the graph that's up now with the different purposes, you'll see that the two smallest sections, the, say, pre-2008 debt was the reason those were levied, the red and the purple. And that pre-2008 debt was issued prior to 2008. And so that will come off sooner. So we will be able to marginally reduce the levy before that.
I have a question. Where's the chart on our debt per capita?
I'm sorry?
Is there a chart on debt per capita?
Not in this presentation.
Okay.
But we can get that for you.
Well, is that an important in the decision-making process when we come with budget? Like, is that something that we just don't care about, or do we just let that keep continuing upward?
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, that is one of the standard charts that we do show you when we're coming out to actually set the rate toward the end, and actually when we do the bond sale itself. And we'll have that coming up in probably the next month to do the new issuance for this year. And we will tell you where our current bond, our debt per capita is today, and where our debt per capita is after the sale. It is one indicator that we use. I would not say that it is the major indicator that we would use on whether we're going issuing new debt is a good idea.
Okay.
Are there any other questions with property tax? On that, then we're going to go to sales tax. Many fewer slides for sales tax. Not quite as complex as a formula. So just to give you an overview of sales tax here in the city of Mesa, when we talk about sales tax, a lot of times the residents don't understand that the city of Mesa sales tax is just a portion of the sales tax that they pay when they go to the register. And so when they get the receipt. And so the actual sales tax rate here in the city of Mesa is 8.05%. That is the total. So as they go to the register and they get the receipt, that's what you would see on it. The city of Mesa sales tax is really broken. It's really 1.75% is the city of Mesa portion. It's broken into three. You can see the red, the purple, and the kind of that teal color blue with three different types of sales tax. So one is unrestricted. That is our city sales tax rate of 1.2%. That is an unrestricted sales tax. What that means is it goes into the general fund and there's no restrictions on the use of that particular revenue stream. The second one is the city, I'm going to go back to the quality of life because that came in first. So quality of life was a sales tax that was voted on by the voters of Mesa and approved at a 0.25. It was actually originally a 0.50% with 0.25 that went away after 10 years. It was just a 10-year for capital improvements. And then 0.25 of it was ongoing. That 0.25, we really consider that at this point public safety. That is the only thing that's being covered by that. It is covering or assisting to cover 120 officers and 65 firefighters is what's covered in that one. And then we have the city street sales tax, which was added later, again, by the voters, voted on by the voters of Mesa to add 0.3% in, and that is dedicated only to streets. That could be streets maintenance or capital projects. It's not limited to operations or capital, but it is limited to streets improvements. Where'd they look today as we look at that? So every time we look at our sales tax, and when we come to you with a forecast, we talk about our general governmental forecast. We're always coming with the general fund and the quality of life because we consider that, since the quality of life is paying for public safety, we kind of put it all together so we can see all of our public safety funds. And so that's why you'll sometimes hear I kind of combine those two numbers. But when you're looking at it as it's coming in for the general fund, current revenue forecast for next year is about $117 million coming into the general fund. The quality of life fund is $24.4 million, again, dedicated to public safety. And then local streets is $29.2 million. That's our current forecast for 18-19 going forward. Some items that were brought up as we're talking about possible election questions for 2018 and also possible funding options for our public safety area of the city. As those expenses are increasing, we wanted to give you some ideas on what that would look like. So if an increase to the sales tax, the Mesa's portion of the sales tax is 0.25%, it would be about, the 18-19 is a partial year. Based on the November election, we would assume a February 1st effective date. So that kind of gives you a portion. So we give you 19-20 would be the annual costs or the annual revenues coming in. It just, as a coincidence this year, that it makes it very easy to do the math. If you notice that a 0.25% increase is about $25 million. Just works out that way this year. It's just very helpful in the explanation. So going up a 0.35 would be about $35 million, and a 0.5 would be about $50 million. Would be ongoing revenues in our current forecast going into 19-20. These would also be subject to an economic correction, as all of our sales tax are, and we would put them into that forecast going forward. So right now, again, as a reminder, we have in fiscal year 19-20 as when we have estimated a possible economic correction. So we would look at this 19-20 would be the annual amount. We forecast a dip in 2021 and then kind of forecast it out from there. This is what we would use for any type of planning purposes on the usage of the money.
On this specifically, so when we talk about sales tax increase, we look at it as a number of the percentage of, as the actual number that that percentage is increasing, right? So you say like a 0.25% increase in reality is actually more along the lines of this a 14% tax increase.
This is Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker. When we say 0.25, we mean adding. So right now we're at 1.75% is our sales tax rate. This would bring it up to 2.0% as the sales tax rate. Correct. This is an adjustment to the rate, the tax rate, not a percentage increase in the rate.
Right. So to clarify, these numbers as amounts that we're actually increasing the tax based on the base rate today, it's a 14% tax increase, a 20% tax increase, and a 28% tax increase. Is that correct? Over the base rate that we have today, which is relevant, right?
Right. I'm going to say that Mr. Wimmer next to me is nodding. I haven't done the math, so I'm going to assume that he's nodding yes, that that would be correct. I haven't done the math, so there is a distinction. There's a difference. We're not saying this is a 0.25% increase in the tax. We're saying this is an addition of 0.25% tax rate.
Sure.
So I want to make sure there is a difference when you're looking at those.
Yeah, but I want to clarify, like, these are massive tax increases, right? I mean, on the overall base rate, we're talking, at the lowest level, you're talking about increasing taxes at 14%. The highest level, you're talking about raising taxes 28%. I mean, this is a very large tax increase.
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, there's lots of ways that you can look at these increases. We're just giving you the facts. If you actually look at our total tax, that's 8.05 that a customer is paying at the register. Ours is 1.75. So there are many ways to look at it, and that's one way to look at it.
Okay. Thank you.
The other thing that we do like to do is look at what the differences are between our neighbors or those other areas in the valley. And so we did give you kind of a quick chart of what, now we looked at retail sales tax because in the city of Mesa, we don't distinguish between the type of sales tax, whether it's retail sales tax, construction sales tax, advertising, utilities. We have different categories of sales tax. We tend to look at retail sales because that's in essence the bread and butter. That's the large, when we give you those graphs, that's where the bulk of the sales are in retail sales when we're looking at those.
Can I just say something that's important distinction because right. There are some of these communities that have higher rates than what you're seeing here that they apply to utilities
yes,
and other items, significant items that we don't. We maintain the same rate across all groups, categories.
Correct.
Whereas I know there are cities here that have a higher percentage against their utilities. So they collect a higher transaction privilege tax
Correct. For
that. Also, there are some cities here that have a different base upon which they apply the the tax rate. This has retail sales, but there are some of these communities that also have that applies to food. Mesa does not apply the sales tax. There's a few others like us, but there are other cities who do apply their. So the base of it's not just in the rate, but it's also in the base of which it is applied to.
And that's really where I was going with this. So there is a difference between, we wanted to give you a comparison of the rate, but we wanted to make sure that you understood that we took the retail sales tax rate. Otherwise, we'd have to give you a large chart that compared all the rates across all the different categories. One of the things that we do in your, when we did that notice of intent for utility rates, and it's in every utility package that we bring forward, when we give you the homeowners comparison, we're actually calculating the impact based on a basket of goods. And so that would take into account if somebody had a tax on food or did not have a tax on food, if they had higher on utilities or lower on utilities and that sort of thing. So when we do that, we're actually calculating the impact when we take those into consideration. But for this chart, for this purpose, this is the retail sales tax, and it could be a different rate in different municipalities.
So just to reference this chart again, where you compare the various communities, out of fairness, we would say you might want to add some other categories like retail sales tax rate comparison on food. And Mesa would be zero. Phoenix would be zero. Mm-hmm. Everybody else would be these same numbers.
Correct.
And sales tax rate comparison or tax rate comparison for primary property tax. Mesa would be zero. I think Gilbert would be zero. Everybody else would be whatever their rates are.
And in our... in our homeowners comparison, which was an attachment to the notice of intent for the utility rates, and is also an attachment as we come forward and talk about utility rates more. And we can also give that to you separately as a separate attachment if you'd like that as well. And we do a comparison between primary property tax, secondary property tax, and impact, a formula that impacts, estimates this impact of sales tax, which includes the utilities, the food, and those sort of things, as well as the water rates, wastewater rates, solid waste. We don't do electric and gas because not everybody has that.
Question, on that and the impact, do you know on top of your head where Mesa is as far as compared to other cities on that impact?
I do at my chair. I did bring with you because that is part of the audit and finance and enterprise committee that we're having later today to talk about utility rates, and we do have all of that as backup in that. But if you look in your backup to the notice of intent to adjust utility rates, one of those attachments, it's actually in, look at that, he is so handy. Okay, it is, and I will, since Councilmember Thompson is here today, I can actually hold it up and not hold it up to a phone. I apologize for that. But this is what it looks like in your packet. And so it was in the backup to the notice of intent for adjusting utility rates. It is our latest homeowners comparison that we do take all of the different factors. Again, we don't use electric and gas because other municipalities do not have those. And it does do give you a comparison. And so we are sitting right now about equal to Phoenix on the total impact. To our, again, our median home owner. So we use everything back to a median home owner. We use everything back to what does Mesa use for water usage and how would that compare to other rates? What is our, you know, what do we buy here and what are our retail sales and utility and that type of thing looks like? Again, with primary and secondary property tax as well. So you'd be able to see those comparisons. In this presentation, we did not give you a comparison of property taxes, but it is in this backup if you'd like to look at that as well. And we can send it out to you separately, too, just so it's easier to find. And we'll do that as well. But you do have that access to it right now.
Thank you.
That was really what we had to do to talk about sales tax. The point of this presentation this morning was to frame that discussion that you're going to be having as you start talking about capital improvement projects, what the costs of those are, what the funding sources would be, if those are going to be a new bond authorization that you're going to bring to the ballot, kind of framing what that would look like, as well as we start talking about our public safety and the needs that we have in our public safety area versus what we can cover in the proposed budget versus what the outstanding needs are. If you're looking for another funding source for that, this would just kind of frames that discussion so you have an idea of when we say a 0.25% increase in the sales tax rate, what does that mean going forward?
So, Mayor and Council, this is kind of the first step. The second step, I'm just kind of, you know, we would propose, I guess, at some point to just bring you the list of projects that have been identified with conversation with council members. We've asked you to provide us any questions or any suggestions of projects. we wouldn't need to be in any particular order. We could just give you categories of the projects and kind of give you a sense of magnitude of what's being considered right now for what would be considered under a general property tax proposal, just so we can deceive. No one's suggesting that we have to go forward with any bond program, but at least those projects that would be eligible to be considered going forward, and we could at least bring you the categories of the different projects, whether it's in streets, parks, or public safety, are the three typical areas that we would look at. Would that be, council be open to us presenting that to you?
What's the timeline, Mr. Brady? In order to set this up for a November election, we would need to make those decisions in June?
Yes, no later than July 2nd. That's a deadline to call the election.
Okay. So to allow for ample...
Yeah, so you're going to be hearing from the departments here pretty soon also, as far as their needs, both operationally and capital-wise, and so we would begin bringing those to you over the next couple of weeks, so that because at some point, I think we all recognize there's a lot of requests out there, a lot of interest in a lot of different projects, but we have to be very mindful of a consideration of the impact that has on the residents. And so we want to bring you the projects and kind of get some guidance from council about how we want to prioritize them, how you know, what are you most interested in, but understanding the cost impact to the homeowner. And so how does that factor into the total amount of the projects we might want to consider now? And the timing, listen, we have, no one's made any decisions. We're just looking at timelines. Do we do a bond election? Do we do a sales tax? We don't have to do any of those. There's a lot of things that would like to get done. There's always cost to delaying because projects become more expensive. I think that's part of the role that we try to work with council on identifying what are things that are most critical and needful, and we make those decisions going forward. But we would start maybe first with the capital. We can also bring to you at some point, kind of based off of, it's been last time the quarter cent sales tax, what that would look like as far as the mix of the public safety, just like we have today. We have a quarter cent for public safety. We could show you what that would look like going forward, a mix between police and fire, and we can do that at a subsequent meeting also. Are those comfortable with all those? Okay. And we'll try to get those lists out to you so that if before the meeting you don't see something that maybe we missed in conversations and you want to make sure it's on the list ahead of time, we can make sure it gets on there. Okay? All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions, Council? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda for this meeting is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Anything you'd like to share, Council? Okay. Next is the schedule for future meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Yes, just again, a reminder that the Falcon Field Airport Open House is this Saturday, March 24th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's a great event. It's free. We ask, though, if you would bring canned food donations that will be accepted for the United Food Bank. So if you could bring those. So it's a great event. Encourage you to get out there. And a lot of people show up, so get there early so you can get parking so you're not walking from Walmart or somewhere to get there. The next study session will be Thursday, March 29th at 7:30. Thank you.
Thank you. If there's nothing else, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you, Mr. Freeman. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.